Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And with the election of Larry Hogan, he's made a promise that he is going to push for a law that allows more charter schools to open in the state of Maryland. Right now, almost all the charter schools in the state of Maryland are in the city of Baltimore. Educating 18,000 children across the state. So this, charter schools have always been a part of a huge debate, whether or not they take away from the public school system, use its resources, and use up the resources, whether they are the answer to a failing public school system that cannot educate its children, as some people would argue. And it's going to be the centerpiece of a debate here. And I think the Maryland debate coming up is going to become one of the great national debates over the future of public schools and charter schools. So we have with us in the studio here Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of American Studies at UMBC, author of Black Berries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities, and on the board of directors from founding a charter school for all boys here in Baltimore City. Dr. Jessica Schiller is Professor of Urban Education at Taos University, parent of two Baltimore City school kids, produced and directed Schools Out, Closing Baltimore Schools, a documentary with New Lens and the Baltimore Algebra Project. Good to have you in the studio. Dr. Ronnie Ellington is back with us once again. She's Associate Professor of Mathematics Education here at Morgan State University, a mother of a public school student, and active in the public schools in our communities. And good to have you back here, Ronnie. Welcome one more time. Bobby McDonald joins us, Executive Director of the City Neighbors Foundation that runs three charter schools in Baltimore, point of total transparency that I spoke and ran a workshop at their event a couple of Saturdays ago that took place at City Neighbors. Please join us here, 410-319-8888, write to us here at talk@steinershow.org, by email, log on to our Facebook pages, tweet me at Mark Steiner, but please call. Your thoughts on charter schools, 410-319-8888. So this is, the crux, there's all these reports. Credo had a report, the national report on charter schools, the ABLE Foundation put a report out in January on the heels of that, called Chartering Maryland's Future. Is there an expanded role for national charter management organizations in our schools? And there are a lot of national organizations like KIPP and others who actually manage lots of schools around the country. So what are the benefits and dangers that we need to look at as we progress down this road? And let me begin with you, if I might, Bobby, as a person who runs through those schools.
The benefits and drawbacks.
Yeah, so, the danger. Why do we need charter schools? Why did you think we needed charter schools? Why did you begin the school you started?
All right. Well, so I'm a mama here in this city. I have three children. And when it came time for Sadie to start kindergarten, I walked down the street to my local public school. I'm also an educator with a master's in curriculum and instruction. So I walked in that door and saw that the classroom was confined and felt oppressed. The students were, told exactly when to talk and how to talk. The teachers looked oppressed. The principal looked like he was scared, The environment wasn't allowing the people in that school to do their best work. But it was obvious that the school was filled with great kids and, wonderful teachers and people who care passionately about public education. And that was the night Maryland passed the charter school law. And so for me and for the families of Northeast, the 17 families that founded City Neighbors, it became an idea that a group of people could get together and dream up an ideal public school together in the community and create it. And that's how we started City Neighbors. And that was 10 years ago. We're celebrating our 10-year anniversary. And now we have three schools serving over 800 students.
So, and I'll come back to that because I visited that school and some other schools as well. But Ronnie, let me bring you into this. Your sense of your child does go to charter school or not?
Oh, no.
No.
She doesn't.
Okay.
Not that she wouldn't, but she does. I don't think she hit the lottery or something. But the – well, yeah. So what is your question, Mark?
As someone who you're on the parents,
Parent Community Advisory Board for Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm. So
one of our members is actually on the Charter Review Board, and we have to hear about when charter schools don't necessarily rise to the occasion, and how are we going to respond? I think all kinds of schools. It's interesting, Mark, your assistant gave us a lot to read to prepare, and I read all of it, And one of the things that just was startling to me is that charter schools do no better than, quote unquote, good public schools, right? Whatever that means. I still don't know what that means, but what it tended to mean from reading was schools in affluent areas who have been historically funded in certain kinds of ways, who have certain culture and social and cultural capital. So schools that have those things tend to do well. Okay, so let's just call that a thing, right? Usually, not all the time, however. So then there's this charter school, okay? And I love, you know, Bobby, that's my girl. I know I've been to City Neighbors, awesome place. Unfortunately, not all charter schools play out that way, right? So I think they are an example. KIPP schools do very well, but I have some thoughts about that. But I think when we start making anything the answer, we have to really be aware, you know, be cautious, because nothing is the answer unless we really look at things holistically. There may be some formula or some things that good charter schools provide that, quote, regular public schools can adapt that can be useful. But at the same time, when you think of the charter school movement, they have a particular sense of sexy, a sense of this is independent. This is, I can't go to private school, but this charter school is better. So the parents who really are committed to certain kinds of educational outcomes are going to be more inclined to go through the lottery process, go through whatever it is. So you still are drawing from a group of parents that have a certain level of social cultural capital, even when you say, oh, it's just regular Baltimore City schools. So I think that there's a lot you have to look at the success rate for certain charter schools, and it's not a be-all, end-all answer. So I think we just have to look more broadly at, well, what are the factors that support charter school success? And then what do we need to put in public schools, the, quote, regular public schools? And I think charter schools have an advantage because they're seen as independent. They're seen as something special. So they get that kind of cachet where your regular public school doesn't necessarily get that unless it's in a affluent area like Roland Park. Then it gets a little cachet. So we have to start thinking about the social and economic and historic realities that we live in that are driving these movements. And we have to look more holistically at what can make a difference for all students in Baltimore, not just a few that hit the lottery.
I'm going to come back to this notion, just if you don't hit the lottery, but you obviously think that there must be a need for charter schools, or you wouldn't have helped found one for, especially for young black boys.
Yeah,
right?
And I would say I actually agree with Dr. Ellington, and even as someone who is at the table creating a charter school, I'm very cognizant of charter schools are not the panacea, that this is not going to be everything that is necessary for all students to thrive and do well. And so there are times where I feel this tug at myself as a current parent of Baltimore City students who are in traditional public schools, and then one in which I'm creating a space in particular just for my son, because I have a daughter. And so I'm only creating this space right now for my son, but it was more about a mission that was very much tied to the academic research that I do that looks at what we have done in this country for young black males and the need to really focus educational opportunities for them in environments that help them thrive instead of help continue to relegate them to the margins of being individuals that we can cast away because we already have a trajectory of what we expect them to be in just a few short years. And so for me, I believe in all of the public schools need to be good schools for our students, all of them. Again, I'm keeping my daughter in a traditional public school. It's only my son that will transition into a charter school, but it's a school that I really felt committed to because of what I see happening in this city for young black males.
Well, there's so much to come back to here from everybody just said, but let me go over to Dr. Schiller.
Well, it's interesting. I basically agree with all of you. I don't know if this is a debate as much as it is a party. But I want to talk about the ABLE Foundation report for a second because that wasn't something raised among us yet. And the ABLE Foundation report is interesting because it relies heavily on the Credo report out of Stanford, which says, and again, that's coming out of many years of research on charter schools, that charters do no better than public schools. Yet the conclusion of the ABLE report is that we need to change the charter law and bring more charters to Maryland. So I find that very interesting. The the argument that they make is that the national network charters like KIPP will do a better job than the current system is doing here in Baltimore. And I'm suspicious or skeptical of that for a variety of reasons, but one is what we've seen go on in cities like Philadelphia and Chicago and New Orleans, where charter networks have expanded rapidly. And so I think that what's gone on there essentially is that that privatization of public schools has served a small group of students, like Dr. Ellington mentioned. And more than anything, it's drawn public support and funds away from the public schools writ large. And so the remaining public schools end up, you know, places where the most underserved students go. And I'm worried about that, that the expanding the charter law here in Maryland would turn you know, what are now some great kind of mom-and-pop operations like City Neighbors and other charter schools into an environment where we have more of a marketplace for schooling. And we know in a marketplace there are winners and losers. And so I don't think that we want to see our educational system in that particular way, with kids who win and some who don't.
Well, let me think. So there's some more critical issues here it seems to kind of focus on. I just wanted to just nail down, bear down a couple of things here before we go to the phones. And Seth and Barbara are going to come right to your calls. But I want to get this out on the table. The way the law is written now has to do with the kind of money that goes to charter schools. And charter schools are saying we don't actually get enough money because out of that we have to pay rent and other things. And so it's actually less money than you're giving to other schools. And that's part of the argument for changing the law. Part of it in the ABLE report was that we're not going to attract the CMOs, the charter management organizations like KIPP and others that run lots of schools around America, to come in that financial setup because it doesn't make any sense for them financially to do that. So the question is, does that take away from the funding for public schools in general if you change the law and bring in more charters? Or does it expand the notion of choice? And how do we define choice in charter schools? Because, you know, I said when I go to City Neighbors, it's a lottery. Mm-hmm. You get in. If your name pops up, you're in. And if it doesn't pop up, you're not in. So, and I think, you know, one of the things I saw at City Neighbors blew me away in terms of how a school is being run. Mm-hmm. And I've interviewed the principal. It is an amazing school. There's no question about it.
And I've been to some that aren't. And it's interesting.
Well.
And being a member of Parent Community Advisory Board, we talk about this all the time. It's on the agenda a lot around what, you know, we look at the numbers and see that, you know, ideally, you're saying that a charter school, if you're going to have a charter school, then you're going to have external resources to support you in running the school. That's why you get the charter. But then it doesn't play it out that way. And so the question becomes, who fits the bill? Because ideally, in these networks like KIPP, it is a for-profit enterprise. I'm not saying that's the case with City Neighbors, but somebody's profiting. So the question is, how do we address that? And so if you have a charter school and you have a charter, then the idea is that you have some other backing that's not the money from the schools to actually implement the innovations that your charter is trying to do. So you have some obligation to financially and fiscally to support the charter that you're proposing and not just the money coming from the school. That's just my idea about it. Like, if you're going to do a charter, you know that there's going to have to be an additional investment. So the question is, how do you create it in a way that's fiscally responsible?
So,
right. Just to add to that quickly, the national networks that they're talking about bringing in do have a tremendous amount of money behind them. And to get a subsidy from the state to pay for their the rent on their building or janitorial services or whatever would just be an extra boon. Plus, being able to negotiate outside the teachers union contract, which is something KIPP pushed for a couple of years ago here in Baltimore and won, is another sort of subsidy and freebie
perk
mm-hmm. for the charter school. And I just, you know, again, on this issue of choice, you know, of course, it sounds great to expand school choice for the parents in the city of Baltimore. We all want that. I'm a parent, too, of Baltimore City kids. But at the same time, you know, in any system of choice, there are winners and losers. I know I have said that, but we see that across the country in other cities.
We need to push back on that a little bit. So here in Baltimore, the charters are doing just as well, if not better, in almost every area than the traditional schools. They're serving the same kids. Their stats, you know, are just lined up, the free and reduced meals. They have 80% free and reduced meals in charters. It's 86% in the traditional schools. So we can't say it's an elitist group. All right. And then when it comes to the funding, consider we're talking about power. It's the same amount of money that I have to work with for every single student that we're serving in charter schools. And we don't have to talk about just City Neighbors in charter schools, but we have more power over those funds. So
what do you mean you have more power?
I mean that every student in Baltimore City has a tuition. It's about $16,000. As a charter school, you have control over $10,000 of that. A traditional school has control over about $6,000 of that. The traditional schools need more power over the funds. They need more power and a mindset of being able to own their schools. That we can all fight for together, and that's what we need to fight for. We need great schools in Baltimore. I need to see some evidence that the system is going to take the schools that they do operate and do something good with them, because I'm not seeing it. So bring it on. Bring on some charter management organizations. I feel concerned, too, about the rate that happens, because right now we have 32 charter schools in Baltimore. They are all, except for KIPP, and even KIPP at some level, grassroots groups. Right. You know, 80% of my kids live within a mile of the building. This is a beautiful thing for Baltimore. So the rate in which we open those doors really does matter to me and to how we move this movement. But I would not want to close that door. Open it up. Let more folks come in. And then the system needs to actually think, why are the charters getting great results? Why are their families so engaged? We need to be able to empower the traditional schools we have so that they have a chance to dream and become a mission-driven organization.
So I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come right and let you all jump right into it. And I promise we'll get to the phones here at 410-319-8888 as we debate charter schools. And let me say that the guests you hear right now and others will be coming on constantly in the next month as we debate this in the state legislature, because this is a critical debate. We'll be hearing their voices a lot, and maybe a few others as well, because we have to wrestle with the future of education. This is a good place to start the debate. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Like crazy, give it all you've got. That's the razzle dazzle. If you're ready or not, on your mark, get set. Now ready, go. Everybody razzle dazzle. Everybody razzle dazzle. Everybody razzle dazzle. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's Staggerly by Lloyd Price. Hit number one on this day in 1959. And on the way to Rick, I didn't tell you, that was Razzle Dazzle by Bill Haley and the Comets. Bill Haley died on this day in 1981. We're back here with our four guests, and all of you are calling in, and these texts that are coming in. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Dr. Jessica Schiller, Dr. Ronnie Ellington, and Bobby McDonald, as we debate this issue and discuss this issue of charter schools. And I do want to get the phones here. I promise folks I'm coming. But this kind of stayed intense during the break. And there were some responses very quickly to what Bobby was saying, and Bobby had some retort to what y'all were saying. So, right? So let's get into that real fast and then open the phone to what our listeners are saying.
So really quickly. I just wanted to speak back to that idea that there's an elite group going to charter schools. When I was talking about winners and losers, I just really meant that there are a certain group of kids that get in there and a certain group of kids that don't, right? And that's just, you know, they can be equivalent in a lot of ways, right? On paper, they can be equivalent in terms of their farms rate, their race and ethnicity, their neighborhoods that they live in. But we have a whole group of folks that will be left out of that, right? So that's the nature of a lottery system. And one very, very quick thing is just on the idea of competition, right? So we bring it, let the floodgates open. Let's bring all these CMOs in here There's no guarantee that that will drive up the quality of schools, and we've seen that again and again in other cities, that more competition actually doesn't lead to improvement in the system, and so we have to be very cautious about that.
Now, Bobby has more invested in this than I do because she's been at it much longer than I have. My school doesn't open until August, but as someone who's been at the table creating this school for the last 5 years, I actually do agree that I'm not interested in these large CMOs coming in, because one of the things that I've really enjoyed about Baltimore and what we're able to do here is the notion of kind of the grassroots, mom and pop, folks who are of the community, connected to the community, wanting and knowing what is necessary in particular parts of this city to help cultivate schools that they know will be of benefit to the children. And at the end of the day, that's all it is for me. And this is a struggle for me personally as well as professionally in terms of recognizing that we are in the midst of a political debate. But yet for me, I'm thinking about the two children that I get up every morning to get into Baltimore City Schools. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about that young boy who will become a sixth grader in my charter school in August and what it is that he needs to be successful. So while we're having the political debate, I'm still thinking about what is necessary for him to learn in order to be successful. So some of this becomes minutia to me, although I recognize that it does play a substantial role and can benefit those of us who are at the table for charter schools.
You know, what's interesting is that was the original thrust of public school. They were community-based schools. If you look at the history of education in this country, that's how schools were built. That's where they were built on. They were community-based. They were directly to the needs of the community. They weren't these big conglomerates coming in to tell you what to do. And that, to me, was the essence of public schools in this country in its genesis.
Yeah. And again, it's in recent years, we can look at what's going on with New Orleans in particular as being a charter-driven and singularly charter-oriented school district. And in my personal opinion, again, although a founder of a charter school, I recognize that there are some issues that are related to that that do not seem to speak to what I want to see happen in Baltimore. I think out of our 30, I think we're up to 34 charter schools, we are successful, but I do think there is something about that success that works because of the kind of grassroots movement that has taken place to create it.
Mm-hmm. Let me open the phones here. We also have, I just got a text from Delegate Mary Washington, and I'll read what she wrote about this.
Hey,
so I'll read her text in a moment. Let me go to the phones first and get some quick thoughts in here and come right back. 410-319-8888. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
I just wanted to thank you for your honoring of Howard Ehrlich at the beginning of the show. I've been a good friend of Howard Ehrlich's since 1988, and I've been his housemate for the last 8 years. And I worked with him at the National Institute Against Prejudice and Violence. He did good work. He was committed all of his life to social justice, and I was surprised because I didn't know it was coming, and I was just so touched at your honoring him. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Barbara. Thank you. It meant a lot to honor Howard for me. He was a wonderful human being, and he'll be deeply missed. 410-319-8888, Seth in Middle River.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Seth.
Hi, please, guests. I have a comment and a question. My first question is, can a already public school become a charter school? That's my question.
Okay.
And my comment is, how I feel about charter schools. I think it's a good thing for, you know, to have a child away from the quote system of schools. But also it makes me kind of nervous because, you know, since this is old system, since this is own, you know, thing, it being its own thing, it will make me nervous to see how it's actually running, seeing as though it's, you know, it's operating independently away from that quote system. So yes, that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. So the answer is any school can
petition
to be a charter school.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be great if they did.
and
grassroots movement.
And there's only so much of operating out of the system you can do, because you still have to apply for these 40 tests a year in certain grades, 30 tests a year in other grades.
We're not having that conversation. I think that's whack across the board. So we're not going to do that today.
Nope, but I'm just saying that to be clear, the charter schools have to do that as well.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. They have to be part of that process as well.
Yeah.
And Mary Washington just wrote in, our existing charter law is one of the best in the country. The debate is not between charter and traditional schools. Look! It is about the corporatization and Walmartization of public education.
Thank you.
The legislation Hogan introduced centralizes the choice in state government and provides them with the ability to give these contracts to who the state pleases. The large corporate educational entities will take over the little ones. Locally controlled charter schools will go the path of local hardware stores. We will fight amongst ourselves while the management companies laugh all the way to the bank with our tax dollars.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, the Walton Foundation, which is Walmart, does fund KIPP and Uncommon Schools and Teach for America. And so the Walmartization that Delegate Washington was talking about, there's some truth to that. I'm not sure that we'd have, city neighbors going the way of the local hardware store, and I would hate to see that. But I think we do need to be concerned about the corporate entities coming in because they're not tied to communities.
Yes.
They don't have vested interests, and they can, at the end of a school year or the middle of the school year that we've seen in some places, just close up and shut down and say, we don't, you know, this isn't working for us. We're gonna close this operation, and you as a parent now have to go find another school placement.
So is that a fear of yours as a person who runs a charter school, Bobby?
No.
Why not?
I'm not fearful of that. You know what I think is happening is we have an industrial model of a school system, right, that's built on that industrial mm-hmm. model. It needs to change. Mm-hmm. It's not changing fast enough. We're trying different ways
right.
to operate public schools so that kids are getting great results. And right here in Maryland, in Baltimore, what we've done, the biggest movement so far, it started with the New Schools Initiative. Now it became the charter school law. And now we're going to have some management organizations come through. They still have to go through an approval process. You know, before City Neighbors could open, I went to however many community association meetings to get the support of the community and to get people to be bought in. The approval process, we can still ask those management corporations to do that, to make sure there are local folks on their governing board, to make sure that it becomes part of a thriving community. I mean, I know we can cast the corporations into this, like, evil villain role.
Easily.
I don't feel that at all. This is hard work.
But we're
actually talking about kids and how we see them as powerful people.
And, Bobby, you have a right to say that because you've put your money where your mouth is and your time and your energy. I don't think that is everybody's intent. So let's just call a thing a thing. With you, that is something I will go to the bank with what you say. But I don't think that's the spirit of all the charters. Because, again, as a member of PCAB, seeing charters come through our door, having these discussions, watching some close that shouldn't have closed and some that stay open that shouldn't be open. You know, so we've seen it's
again, the politics.
Exactly.
It, right?
There's still a political environment that's running all of this. And not everybody shares that level of commitment and passion for our kids in the charter movement. That's all I want to say.
I get you, Ronnie. And I don't want to go to the bank with you. Let's go have some coffee instead.
I won't go to the bank.
But should for-profit companies?
In Maryland, you have to be a nonprofit. You have to.
Well, KIPP is not a nonprofit.
Yes, it is. In
theory.
In Maryland.
Local.
Right. It's connected to a larger thing. But in Maryland, you have to be. Yeah. We need to make it so that all of our public schools are excellent. And then, like the woman in D.C. said, we would have school choice and not school chance.
So well, I have to talk about how we have actually get to this, the real choice of decent schools. But let me get to the phones. Let me read this email that came in. I'll go to Ellen in a second. Let me read this email first from Betty, then we'll go right to Ellen. Betty writes in, over the years, many people have said that one of the issues in Baltimore City education is the lack of a curriculum that develops deep pride in African-American students about their communities and history. Ooh. What is the youth, the charter schools, doing along these lines?
Ooh. Thank you.
She's
not
right.
I'm not doing much.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, since I'm just opening in August, I don't know if there's much in terms of specificity that I can offer there. But one of the things that brought me to the table for this particular charter school was wanting to create a different vision for in particular, brown and black boys in this city to see themselves as being very much the center of what could be success instead of standing on the periphery looking at success and saying that it can't be me. And part of that comes from having a stronger sense of self, believing that you have a self-worth that is worthy of being explored and expanded and embraced. And it's also about having a sense of that history that catapults you to another space or place to know that you too can be successful.
Let me open up this. I think that's a really critical issue as well, and I have a proposal that my producers like to throw things at me when I do this, but I'm going to do it at the end of the hour about how do we continue this discussion over the next several weeks, because I think this is really critical, and schools have always been the centerpiece of this program, one of the great centerpieces of this program. So, but let me go to the phones here and also read this tweet that came in, 410-319-8888. Ellen, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Ellen.
There are so many things I'd like to say, but I'll try and narrow it down. I mean, always follow the money, right? I mean, that's rule number one in understanding. The Walton Foundation funds the chairs in universities for so-called education reform, and we've learned that the word reform doesn't really mean anything. Basically it's private money looking to take over the public education money. That's the basic line. That's what's happening. And one of the things to do that is to get rid of the teachers' unions, which is somehow sort of an undercurrent that's also going on in the charter schools. I just want to address, and they can also throw out the students. So they have a way of measuring success that's a little dubious. Anyway, but just in terms of the fairness of the lottery system, there are many parents who aren't even aware that there is a lottery system. So the very bottom of the bottom of the most uneducated people in the society are not even participating in the lottery system, and there's a level of unfairness even in the lottery system. That's it. That's all I want to say.
Thank you so much. And the tweet that came in, Seth wrote in, "Can charter schools make their own curriculum?"
Yeah. To some degree.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's one of the greatest things about a charter school is that the educators can get together and really respond to the students they're serving and to the culture and to the community and say, what are we going to spend our time learning and how will we know kids are learning? What's real assessment? I'm not talking about the standardized test, which is, not actually used to inform practice and teaching.
So, CMOs the uncommon schools, the big charter organizations do have more standardized curricula and assessment that they use. So there's some room for tweaking, but it's like a centralized system in that way.
It's just private. Yeah.
You were going to say what?
No, I just wanted to follow up with what Bobby was saying is that, that is one of the beauties of a charter school, but it's also important to know that we still have the same parameters of what city schools expects us to comply with in terms of certain standards. And so even though we have these innovative ways of approaching education, we haven't been given the latitude to just do whatever and never have to answer to North Avenue, because there are still limitations and restrictions that are placed upon us, which gives some level of oversight that I think people are concerned that doesn't exist. So we do have that process, and we're not being given this complete free rein to do as we'd like and never have to report back to city schools.
In some ways, maybe North Avenue is the problem.
That's another show, Mark.
But so some people think North Avenue is the problem. Yeah. Other people, as was mentioned just a moment ago, think that teachers' unions are the problem. Is that part, I'm saying in this? And that this
that's
is...
That's another show.
No, but is part of the charter debate, the subtext, and we'll come right back to what Mary Washington texted in, because I think that's at the heart of what's going to happen the next couple of months here in the debates in Annapolis. But what about the role of city teachers, of teachers' unions in all this?
Good question. It's a good question. I mean, this is what's happened. Charters in other cities that have these more and other states that have more open laws than Maryland does have been able to circumvent a lot of the union, the contract that the teachers union has, especially around salary and certification. So, they can hire teachers that haven't gone through traditional certification pathways. But is that to say that the teachers union is the enemy of innovation? I don't think so. I mean, I think that we have to really treat each union sort of differently. Chicago, the CTU, for instance, has been the most innovative body in the city. in terms of pushing forward what education should look like for the city kids. The BTU is real different than that. So,
and it's not the only game in town, you know. The right of teachers to collectively bargain, I will absolutely fight for. And yes. I think, I fell asleep to union lullabies when I was a little kid, you know. I'm not against unions. And so, but the BTU, why are they the only game in town? There's also the AFT. And why can't teachers...
BTU is the AFT, though.
Same thing. Okay. They're the local.
Okay, the local. AFT. So I want them to have more choices is what I'm saying. And so why can't our teachers come together and say, this would be a contract that would make a difference for us? Why can't they design that contract to say this would be
because
the real
thing? Because teachers would have to organize themselves to take over their union.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
I love that idea.
That's right. And there is something... Mark is right, but there's also something that exists... called a school-based option that, you know, where mm-hmm. teachers can get together.
Right. Which they have done.
And, right, make which some recommendations.
They've done that. Our teachers got together and created an evaluation system that they did a school-based option for. It was excellent.
So there are two things I want to hit here, and I do want to invite you all back in the next coming weeks to continue this. I think it's a really critical discussion. There's other people who need to be in this discussion as well who are part of our schools and part of the charter movement, like Jason Botel, who's not here today, who's and others who really oppose the idea of where charters are going need to come in and have this dialogue. But what Mary Washington was saying was that the charter school law as it exists now is fine the way it exists. It doesn't need to be changed.
Although it's considered one of the most restrictive in the entire country.
Restrictive
though,
for so. Businesses to move into.
Well, even for those of us who are mom and pops,
we
would say so. Just in terms of our hands are bound and tied on certain decision making that we feel like is necessary to do. And that's even, again, on the early stage of just going through the process to open my doors. And again, I'm sure Bobby has more in terms of narratives to share, having 10 years of doing this, where, you know, I entered into this process being very pro-union and have found myself really struggling with some of what happens as a result of some of what is expected of us under charter school law and certainly in working with the BTU.
Can you be specific about what that means?
Can I open my doors first?
Yeah, no, I'm just curious what the limit.
What are some? Yeah, that's what I'm curious about.
What would be the limitations?
Live it, not just on paper.
So we have to let go of how it works to operate public schools. We have to let go of
what
the past. I mean that the amount of time that I spend and the other executive directors and operators of independently run public schools, charter schools in Baltimore spend holding the system at bay for the unending amount of compliance and standardization they push at us, every new initiative, every policy coming at us. What I could accomplish if I weren't spending my time doing that, makes me say, thank you, Governor Hogan. Let's tweak that charter school law because I need the autonomy to do my job and do it well, and I'll fight for other public schools
I think,
to have that,
I think
too.
Here's what the issue is, and I think this is a really important point in the discussion to me, and I think that the devil's in the details, what we mean by that. I mean, what gets tweaked, what controls can happen, and what are and there is a concern among a lot of people, theoretically and practically, that this is – the part, not all of it, but part of a charter school movement is the attack on public education in general and taking that out of public hands and privatizing public education. That is a real fear that people have when it comes to charter schools, especially when you have large companies investing large amounts mm-hmm. of money mm-hmm. in taking over public schools. I mean, that is a real fear. So the question is,
there's a middle ground.
But what are the details that need to be changed to make a school run independently? Some people would argue without that part of it happening.
Good question.
Yeah, I think there's a middle ground between what we have now, which is restrictive on our current charters, and opening the floodgates to anybody who who claims to run a charter operation coming into Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So I think that. And from what I hear from the conversation now, but also talking to other charter operators here locally, that there needs to be more autonomy. And that's actually for all schools. There needs to be more autonomy in how they run things, how teachers decide how to teach and what to teach, coupled with accountability at the end of the day. But without that ability to make critical decisions locally for what, to respond to your students – your community, your group of parents. It is very difficult. And I'm not from Maryland, so I was really surprised to see the level of centralization that exists here.
Well, I mean, it's, go ahead, Ronnie.
No, I was just saying, you know, the balance between autonomy and accountability. So your accountability structures are becoming more and more national-based, right, with the Common Core and da-da-da-da-da, right? So we're moving the accountability scale up while trying to localize and be autonomous. That's a tension.
Absolutely.
That's the tension, because I can't hold a local school with particular kinds of issues and concerns and needs accountable to this big thing up here, which may or may not respond to their local concerns and needs of the children in that school. So this whole moving up the accountability is more national, da da da. We're moving in that direction on accountability, but at the same time, charter schools are trying to respond to local concerns, and that's where the tension gets shaky.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then to find what we mean by accountability.
Testing scores or whatever we call it.
Well, yeah,
whatever.
They don't have to equal one another.
I know, but
somewhere in there, there's actually kids in classrooms,
yes,
and teachers in classrooms and principals trying to support and create an environment where they can do their best work. And so we need to do what's right for kids, and then the tests are going to have to take care of themselves.
Right.
Except that we are basing what a school success is,
right,
and basing the amount of money this education system spends outside of school on tests.
Exactly. So right. The accountability structure is influencing
right?
that.
I know. I think we'll need to change it.
Of course.
Yeah.
That becomes the tension. You asked the question about what, you know, what's the fear of like having these autonomous entities when your school systems are accountable at this national level. How can they trust these autonomous entities to do what needs to be done to, quote unquote, ensure these outcomes that they're accountable to at the national level? Now, that's what the debate, that's the rub.
And I think that this is a very important discussion that the four of you are having on this program, I think, today. And I think that, I don't just mean it because you're on my program, I mean it because I think it's an important discussion. And it may be one of the single most important discussions that's going to take place in the state legislature over these next couple months. Because of Larry Hogan's agenda, because of the many Democrats who just want to keep things the way they are, status quo, and don't want to change anything, to the people who do want to privatize education, to the unions, the MSEA that's trying to protect teachers and build an educational model. And there's a lot of tension here about how this should happen. I think that's what needs to be mm-hmm. pushed, I think, in the next mm-hmm. couple months.
And while we're having that push, I mean, to go back to a comment that Bobby said earlier, is we have to be thinking about the children that are sitting in classrooms.
Are you serious?
And what is necessary for them?
Do you think that, anyway, idealistic conversation. We always know that. Everybody knows that, but that's not what's running the engine.
Not at
and
all.
And that's unfortunate.
And that's the problem.
But that's been the problem. Like, come on, let's call it what it is. We can say that. Like, when people are doing political campaigns, it's all about education, the children mm-hmm. and all of that. But when money start to be low or something needs to be cut, we didn't get to that today, I don't think. But this whole idea of where does that come from? A lot of times it comes from education. Yeah. So you follow the money. I think somebody said that. Follow the money. That tells you what you care about.
Mm-hmm. And we should talk about who is benefiting and who is losing in this system, right? I mean, the system of charters in Maryland is largely for Baltimore City right. and PG County,
right.
right? We're not talking about everybody's children here.
But we will be, I think, with these law passes.
Well yes, but and then
don't you go to
maybe.
I
think when we're talking about
Montgomery County,
yes,
and Howard
I don't
County
see Rockville with charter school. No.
When we're talking about this conversation, I think we're talking about low-income kids and what kind of education they're going to get.
I don't get this part. That is everybody's children.
What
are you guys talking about?
Okay, we're going to leave that off the table. We'll talk about that off the record.
I don't want to leave anything off the table. What do you mean?
You're making it a divide, and I don't want it to be divided like that. It's, you know, the 86,000 students that are in Baltimore are mine. They're yours, Ronnie. Yours, Jessica. Mm-hmm. They're yours. I mean, they are our kids.
Sure.
That's what we're talking about. And the way we see them is what has to drive this conversation. I don't care, like, we get to say what is. We get to say what the thing is, Ronnie. The thing is our kids in Baltimore are powerful and creative and imaginative and worthy of respect. And our schools need to teach teach them and treat them that way.
And we're in a system that's grounded in historic racism and classism, and we can't ignore those realities. And certain things play out from a historical context that we cannot ignore.
Absolutely.
Period. So
absolutely.
You're absolutely right. I know the truth of who we are as resilient people, but let's call again. I deal in reality of what falls out when you look historically. So, system.
We have to break here because we're getting to the top of the hour. But I just two things very quickly as we get to the top of the hour here. A, I'd just like to bleed into the top of the hour just for a few minutes. I'm going to get a closing thought from each one of you about where this series of conversations needs to go. I want to hear from you where you think the conversations need to go that we're having here. Because I think this is a forum that delegates listen to, senators listen to, and we have to influence the future of our schools. As little as we can here on a daily show, but I want to. We've always done that. So I'm just going to take a minute to come back and not spend a lot of time as we get to our next guest. But I really want you to conclude that for us, where you think this should go next. On the way to break, I'm going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. www.mecu.com or steinershow.org. MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner is there. And we are going to take a very brief break and come back on our way to break here. Thank you for letting me be myself. Sly and the Family Stone. Went gold in this day of 1970. Good. Went away for a minute. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more. I am what was playing under me for a moment anyway. That's Can I Change My Mind by Tyrone Davis, who died on this day in 2005. So remember him and his great music. We're going to have close out this conversation on the Mark Steiner Show here for this day about the future of charter schools, which is be the major debate happening in the state legislature. And I just want to go around the room and have everybody have a final thought about where this conversation should go. And I'm just going to literally do it, just go around the room. So, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, let me begin with you.
Sure. I can make it very quick. What I would say is that there needs to be, we need to stop the debate between public traditional schools and charter schools and start finding ways, innovative ways to work together so that we're not working against each other, but we're actually working together to replicate, to specifically learn from each other, but then also be able to replicate what success looks like for our children.
Dr. Schiller.
I would agree with what's just been said, that we need to stop the charter. Yes or no charter is not really what's important here. What's important here is about what public education should be for all kids. Mm-hmm. And underneath that, we need to have, I think, a more community conversation about what that is. We need to bring parents. We need to bring kids in the room. We need to bring teachers in the room to see what and to have folks listen to that. The charter debate, in a way, is a distraction from that. We have a huge amount of money going into testing that can be used for public education. And I think it's not an either or. There's no silver bullet. We're not looking for the answer here. We need to figure out what's good for all of us and replicate those practices in all schools for all kids.
Bobby McDonald.
Sure. So I'm thinking that the future is about not just charter schools, but public education. And that's really what I care passionately about. And I think if we envision, you know, a humble system of schools that includes many different ways of operating public schools, we can have schools where students are known, loved, and inspired. And that's why I'm at this table. And I think the people of Baltimore are ready for that. And there's no reason why we can't have every single public school thriving.
Dr. Ellington.
I think this is a fallout of a larger conversation, and it just reminds me, I just went to review Dr. Gloria Lassen-Billen's work in 2006 on this whole notion of the education debt. There's a whole conversation about why things are the way they are. And they are not just current contextual. They are historic. They are moral. They are financial. There's a whole world. She proposes a framework to think about why the achievement gap is pervasive, regardless of the interventions that we try to do, because we're not addressing this debt of how we have historically treated certain groups and how that plays out in the resources that they now have. And so when we use formulas to say, well, this is fair and this is fair, we're not considering things that are underneath that that need to be considered to really make it an equal playing field for all children. So really thinking about this more holistically and not just as a one point in time phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ellington from here at Morgan State University, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt from UMBC, Dr. Jessica Schiller from Towson University, Bobby McDonald, City Neighbors. Good to have the four of you here. We'll continue this. This is just the beginning. Thank you all so much for being
Thanks
part
for
of
having us.
Thank you.
We're taking a brief break. We'll be coming right back. Turn back to Hands of Time, once again by the wonderful Tyrone Davis. And then we come back to look at ISIS and what should be done. Stay here.
Oh, darling, I'm so lonely without you. I can't sleep at night, always thinking.